It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We are live on the show floor at the NAB Show, the National Association of Broadcasters 2012. And I've got a great team to talk about all the cool new products from NAB. A little Mac news, too. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 295, recorded April 17th, 2012 at NAB. The Mac is just a dongle. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Meet easily with colleagues, even when you're traveling or working remotely. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small businesses that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try the service free for 30 days of unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on MacBreak. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers Apple and Macintosh and mostly lately iOS. And we have a special edition of MacBreak Weekly because we're at the NAB show, the National Association of Broadcasters show in Las Vegas this week. Alex Lindsay is with me. We'll let Andy Iannocco sleep in this morning.
Yes.
Alex, you are the Energizer Bunny of the NAB. You started.
You know, what's funny is I felt like I really took it easy yesterday.
So you started over the weekend giving classes.
Yeah, a couple of days of classes.
A couple of days of classes. Then Monday, we say, Alex, go out there and record 1,000 pieces. And you only came back with 25. I'm just very disappointed. You recorded, basically, I think Alex was trying to hit every booth at NAB and do a 5-minute video. But I'm so grateful to you because through your eyes, we've seen a lot of very interesting stuff.
Well, and I feel like we've just scratched the surface. So tomorrow, we're going to go out and get some more.
Well, we have so many that we are actually going to make a special.
Oh, awesome.
Alex Lindsay, Energizer Bunny, tours NAB. It's so long, and there's so much of it that we're just going to run it at 2X, and it'll be over before you know it.
Well, it's funny. We've been doing these for years for the Pixel Corps. You know, like
wander
around, and so it's something
it's like you've done it a million times.
We do usually 30 to 50 of them, and you know, so it's just kind of like
20's nothing.
Interviewing people, like the suggestion was to interview people. It's a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, this is
you don't have
nice.
To know I anything.
I know. I was like,
except
I
what's
this.
Been fun, like for instance, when you went to the. The guys who do the camera cards.
Yeah.
That was more an education in camera cards than anything else. People have been saying, right. Somebody said in the chat room, I've learned more in this day at NAB, in these 2 hours at NAB, than I learned in school about videography.
Well, and I'm really glad because that's what I hope, when I think about what we're doing, it's the idea is like, let's look at stuff, but let's use that as a conversation to talk about what is important in production.
You know, well, people are getting a lot out of it. Awesome. And even if they're not interested in video production, I think it's fun to see the technologies that are used and so forth. Speaking of teachers, Larry Jordan is also here. He's the king of Final Cut. Great to see you, Larry. Thanks
Leo,
for joining
it's
us.
Always good to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Digital Production Buzz is the name of your
podcast. It is the second oldest podcast on the planet. The oldest was started by Adam Curry, called All Things Digital, in May of 2005.
Yeah.
And Digital Production Buzz started in September of 2005, focusing on digital video production and post-production and distribution. So we're talking to the filmmakers. Actually, the people that attend NAB are the folks that listen
to our
podcast. You're
talking to their grandchildren now, which is really great, of the people you know.
Listen, I have a 22-year-old that's been watching him since 10, so be careful how far you go in that direction. Yes.
Larry Jordan and Associates also. We have some Final Cut news, so we'll ask you about that in just a second. Alan Tepper is a longtime friend, and we see him every year. He writes for the Pro Video Coalition, does a podcast in both English and Spanish called Techno Tour.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And it's an honor to be here, first time on your show, and I really am honored to be here
Thank you
on
for,
your show
for
again.
Coming in. Well, and Alan and I correspond all the time because you've had some really good articles lately about all sorts of interesting topics, so it's been really great to get you on. I'm glad.
And one of which
here.
Has you and Alex flying to the 24th century and back. So maybe that's how Alex got so energized. Maybe the trip back from the 24th century was somehow related to that.
The coffee there is great.
No, I doubt it.
Also with us, Darren Okada, who is a cinematographer. He's a former past president of the American Society of Cinematographers and is at the ASC.com. It's great to have you, Darren. This is probably, NAB is probably, you know, this is your business. You come here every year.
Yeah, I've been coming here for about 10 years, even though in the beginning it was, you know, coming here looking at film-based things that get broadcast. But now it's everything. I mean, this is like the future of what I think, you know, everyone's going to be doing.
Well, I talked yesterday to the guy who puts this show together, the NAB show together, and he said only 25% of the attendees, 90,000 people here this year, only 25% are broadcasters. It isn't the National Association of Broadcasters. Right. And it's really a National Association of Content Creators.
Yeah. I mean, this is it, the show has gotten to be a show about anything media, any way of producing, posting, getting it out. And, you know, it's been just, I would have to say for a show that has this kind of legacy, I'm impressed that they moved with the times.
They really moved with the times. And I think maybe in some cases left broadcasters in the dust.
Yeah.
But for those of us who create content, this is a wonderful playground of stuff. You must be, I don't know, let me ask, are you excited about the new Canons? They've announced two new cameras for cinematographers.
Yeah. I'm excited with the C500.
Yeah, that's a $30,000 puppy.
Right.
They also do a 1DC, which is their 1DX, but it's focused on film as opposed to still pictures.
Yeah. For me, the DSLR movement, I call it the DSLR movement because it is. That's an incredible camera to use, the 1D. But the 500 came out of cinematographers talking, like myself, to Canon and saying, we can't have everything, but could you build this and this and this and this? And of course they say no, and then they come back 6 months and say, well, how about this? And I think that's why that camera for me is fun, because they're actually listening. You can't put everything in the camera. Then you get back into the $200,000 camera.
Right.
But a camera that has attributes of let's go out and shoot something and let's put it on a big screen is incredible. And, you know, all these companies are stepping up to do this now.
It really started with Red, didn't it?
Red woke everybody up. Whether they had a camera that first, because I remember Alex was here. We were here that first year when they had their tent. Nothing that really worked. But I think the promise...
In fact, many of us thought this is all bogus. There's no way they're going to ship a product with those specs.
Exactly. And if you're in a tent, you can just tear it down and sell it somewhere else. I think the threat of we're going to come out and do something incredible got everybody to wake up.
I think also the excitement. I think that the two things that were a wake-up call were, A, the excitement around Red and how many people were buying Reds and how many people were excited about that. And the second was the Canon, you know, the Mark II, you know, or the 5D Mark II.
Yeah.
Is that one just exploded. I don't think Canon expected that.
No. The Canon guy told me, he said, well, we thought we'd throw in some video into our still camera. We had no idea. Then along comes this guy named Vince LaFleure. He shoots stuff with his 5D Mark II that is mind-blowing. Night scenes, you know, incredible stuff. And I think that was a shock even to Canon.
Yes.
To their credit, it took him a couple of years, but they came back with the 1DC and then the 300 and now the 500. Which are really aimed at filmmakers.
Yeah, they're aimed at filmmakers. I mean, the Canon has made it a point that they are committed to being in this market of professional imaging. And
whether it's still or video.
Yeah,
and that's been very different than the past, right?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
This has been, Canon has really been, you know, stopped at about $10,000 or $12,000, and after that they went to lenses.
Yeah, and it's two different divisions. Like, the division that makes these cameras did not talk to the still photography division.
These are the Vixias you're talking about. These are the consumer grade camcorders we use to shoot.
But the entire video development marketing department of Canon had no idea what the 5D was going to be.
A good thing, because they would have killed it. They would have said, "Wait a minute, this is a camcorder business. It's a big business. You're going to kill us."
Absolutely. So it forced them. I think that's how the other thing about the C300 and the 500, it forced both sides to, like, hey, I work at Canon too, you know, let's start talking, take ideas from each other, and then build the thing. So I think that's why, it was a really rapid development schedule, and I don't think they could have done that unless they all kind of got together. So
one of the things that's very much a thread going out through all of NAB is workflow, because now you've got giant files. I think the 500 is going to be able to shoot raw 4K video, which is something like 10 gigabytes a minute. You've got giant files. You've got to manipulate them. You're no longer just putting it out in one form. You're going to have an iPhone, an iPad, and you're going to do 100 different versions. And, Larry, I know that Final Cut's responding a little bit to this. They're going to have support for the Red camera. They're going to be part of this workflow, right?
I was invited to a meeting Sunday morning with the product team at Apple.
Apple's not here, correct, except that they are.
Well, everybody is here. It's just that they don't have a booth.
They're locus.
And so what they were doing is they were meeting. It was an on-the-record meeting with Apple as opposed to an off-the-record meeting, which is what we had last. But it was made absolutely clear at the beginning that everything they talked about was on the record except for I got advanced look at some of the announcements from third parties, which was under non-disclosure until it was announced here at NAB. But they wanted to go through and sort of say, this is where we are. And then at the end of the meeting, they said, these are the features they're going to be adding in Final Cut 10 in the future.
Which is really unusual for Apple.
Well, I think they're still...
They're under pressure. I tell you what, I met somebody here. I can't remember his name. You would know him. He says, I'm the guy who got Hollywood to use Final Cut. He said, he's a television film, a television editor. Everybody was using Avid. He convinced a lot of people to go to Final Cut. And I said, come to Mac Break, and he's busy right now. I should have gotten his card. He said, the sad thing is Hollywood's turning its back on Apple right now. You're agreeing, Alan. It's not good for Apple right now.
My opinion, and I'm sure Larry has his opinion, which may be the same or not, but I think that Apple is focusing on a different group of professionals now. I think
unprofessionals.
Depends how you define professional. If you make money by producing video, then by one definition you're a professional. But less high end.
Right.
More corporate, more video.
This guy said they've all gone back to Avid because Final Cut 10 was missing some significant features for us even. We looked at Premiere, we were a little concerned for the lack of SAN support. And the lack of an updated Mac Pro with Thunderbolt has really hurt them.
Yes, and I must disclose that Avid is a very good client of mine. I've been doing a whole bunch of translations for them for all their new products at NAB. I had to translate at the last minute 10 brochures of new products. And since we're on Mac Break Weekly, I'll mention that they have even more use of the iPad now.
Oh, interesting.
With Avid.
Yeah.
But not so much for editing, for handling what's called the rundown, and for the benefit of our viewers and listeners, a rundown, of course, there's a rundown here. I'm not seeing it, but I'm sure there's a rundown for this program.
There is.
There usually is.
I'm just not sharing it with you.
But just to define it, because many of the listeners and readers may not know what it is, it's kind of like a constantly changing document that shows what's going to be happening, and things are being added and removed constantly. And through their iNews and their new Sphere product, you'll be able to manipulate the rundown from your iPad wirelessly from anywhere in the world.
And that's that workflow component that I was talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Although in this case, it's not manipulating
files.
The video.
Yeah.
Well, it's the order of the stories.
I don't want to get too far
adding
track.
And subtracting.
I brought that up only because I think that the fact that Apple is leaking what Final Cut is up to is a response to the fact that they feel like they're losing people. Is that would you say, Larry, that that's a fair?
I think there's something a little bit different going on. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think two things happened. One is the launch was probably the worst launch of a product Apple's ever done, with the possible exception of Mobile Me. It was blown in every possible way it could be blown. You don't launch a product and increase your competitor sales, and you don't launch a product and alienate your entire user base. If we separate the launch of Final Cut 10 from the product of Final Cut 10, if we look at, if for some reason we could go back in time and have Final Cut 7 and all of its associated programs live in harmony with, because it does now, live in harmony with Final Cut 10, and Apple, if Apple had said, Final Cut 10 is the future, we're going to run it in parallel with Final Cut 7 for a year to give people a chance to figure out how to blend over, the world would have knelt at Apple's feet, said, this is the future, we're happy. But what they did is they killed Final Cut 7, provided no upgrade path.
That was the big issue.
And the upgrade path finally showed up in January, but by then, so many people were spending all their time being angry with Apple. I get about 300 emails a day, which is a fraction of what Leo gets, but nonetheless, it's a fair amount of, and I would say it's split 50-50 with people saying they love Final Cut 10 and they can't live without it, they're making money and they're a happy camper, and the other half saying, I hate Final Cut 10, I'm never going to go with it, and Apple has just made my life difficult. And I think both groups are right, is that there is no one perfect tool that meets all the needs. I think what Apple is doing Apple told me that they liked being able to share future features, which they did when they pre-announced multi-camera support, when they pre-announced the 10.03 release. They said, that worked really well for us. We want to do that some more. So one of the reasons they had the meeting was to be able to share four new features that are coming sometime in 2012. The first feature is multi-channel audio editing tools. The second
So that's kind of like having soundtrack built into...
I don't interpret editing tools to mean mixing. So okay. I am not going to go that far and say yes, although that is clearly a place you could jump to, a conclusion you could jump to. The second thing is dual monitors. We would call these source and record, where you're able to compare two different. It's probably not going to be what we're used to in Premiere Pro or Final Cut 7. Apple made a point of saying that they wanted to do something, quote, better, whatever that is. The third is support for MXF wrapped videos, so you don't have to. MXF is XDCAM EX.
Sony.
So it can read XDCAM natively, but it's got to convert it to a QuickTime format. Now it'll just take that MXF wrapper that contains the XDCAM format and read that natively without having to convert to QuickTime. So I said, does that mean you're moving away from QuickTime? He said, no. There's nothing that we're moving away from QuickTime. We're just supporting another format. And the fourth one is native support for Red. Right now they have to work with QuickTime proxies. Now they'll support Red natively.
It's interesting, because a lot of camera companies are doing the opposite. They're saying, we're writing into Final Cut ProRes form.
Well, one of the cool things that Apple got right is ProRes. From people that hate Apple, they love ProRes. It's a really good codec. It has really high quality. It's very efficient. It edits quickly. So these are all the reasons to adopt ProRes. And if you don't have to transcode your media and you bypass that whole optimization step, then you're in to edit faster.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting, though, is why they don't. To me, when you're doing lots of mass work, the happy medium when you're doing like 2-hour events or 8-hour events or whatever is LTE, you know, where you're getting a little bit of savings without, you know, destroying the image. Proxy just destroys the image. 422 for long form is a little bit, you know, oftentimes I'm working on events where we have 12 records going on, and then that all has to be backed up before we leave.
You're just
so we get
showing
real
off.
Sensitive. No, I'm just saying we get real sensitive to the amount of data that we have to move, and so a third less data is a big deal to us, and then having to edit it and process it and everything else. And so the issue is, but Final Cut doesn't natively, I mean, it, you can open it and work with it, but it's not, when it saves out, it wants to go to 422, not 422. It's regular or proxy, right?
Its default setting is 422, which is the middle format. There's L2 and proxy below, and there's 422 HQ and 444.
But can you
above.
Set it to actually work in LTE?
I
believe it wants to go to proxy. Like it wants to jump down.
Oh, right. The proxy file is specifically designed for laptop editing, and they went specifically to the smallest size to save file space. It would have been cool if we could have a switch that allows us to select. Yeah. So you are, as always, flawlessly correct in that you cannot select LT as a compression choice.
Right.
You could convert it, but that takes your time.
So we've got let's get through the four.
Audio editing tools was the specific word they used.
Okay.
The second is dual monitors, which is analogous to source record. The third is MXF wrapper support, and the fourth is Red native files.
So the Red output you can edit directly in
Final. What Red does is it creates two types of files. It creates a Red native file, and then it creates three QuickTime proxy files. And normally you in Final Cut would edit those QuickTime proxy files. Now you're able to edit the Red native, which is a RAW format. So for people that like processing lots of data and having absolute image manipulation control, think Alex, then Red native is a good thing.
Once you want to start doing any kind of color correction to it or anything else, you need to get a hold of the entire color, all the color information that's in the proxy won't work because it's just a little QuickTime. Right? You know, it's
now the next thing that Leo should ask is a brilliant question.
Is Final Cut 8 in the horizon?
I asked that question.
Yes.
No.
See, I'm as brilliant as you, Larry, but only.
No. It's because you read the cue sheet that
That's
I gave
exactly
you before
right.
the show. The answer is no. The Apple is fully committed to Final Cut 10. There is no Final Cut 8 lurking in the wings because I asked.
This is it.
Now, the other thing is Apple very much, two more things from Apple than one conjecture. One thing from Apple is, I said, are these the only features we can expect? No, no, no. They said, there's other features coming, but these are the ones that we're highlighting at this point. I then went through a litany of things that I would like to see, and they all nodded their head and committed to nothing. I think Alan is exactly right with something that he said, is that Apple sees, and Autodesk, I think, reinforces this, Apple sees a different definition to professional than the typical Hollywood editor doing a feature film. If we look at Hollywood, and Alex, correct me if your numbers are wrong, but we're seeing probably 4,000 to 6,000 people earn their living editing Hollywood feature films.
At most.
It's a tiny market.
When you look at the A-level or B-level films, I mean, I think you're down to 50.
There's a lot of television production.
When you talk about television, there's a lot more.
But it's still going to be less than 10,000 people that Absolutely. Make their living as an editor. And to deliver mass market software, you can't sell to a 10,000-person market. And look at how many people are working with Final Cut 7 and Avid Media 3, Medium Composer 3 is still being used actively in Hollywood productions. Right. If you've got a system that works, you don't upgrade. So Apple is saying, where is the world headed and who is the new professional? Now, I think they screwed up the launch, but that does not necessarily mean that Final Cut 10 is dead in the water. I think there's some very powerful things and speed things can do with Final Cut 10.
I have to say, I can't go back to Final Cut 7. I mean, it makes me angry to open it. Like when I open up Final Cut 7, I'm just like, I cannot believe I ever used this piece of crap. You know, I cannot believe I ever did this because... You know, I'm learning Premiere and Avid because we're incorporating that in Smoke because we're incorporating that into some of our training, and I really like a lot of things. I like the scale. There's certain features in Premiere that I love. There are scalability things that you get out of Avid that you just don't get anywhere else. Smoke has of course all the effects and everything else, but I have to say that my day to day, like what sits on my laptop and if I have to cut something really quickly, it's Final Cut 10 is what I'm using. On a day to day basis and. It is an order of magnitude faster than what Final Cut 7. And there's little things that frustrate me about how it works, but when you start getting used to how you build compound clips and how you, I'm just going to stash this together, I'm going to detach this, I'm going to move it around, and how quickly I get things done, I would never, ever, ever go back to 7.
And I think that gets to the big point, which is you find the tool that meets your need. And what happens is we get caught up in the religious war of I've got to support this or I've got to support that. And that Apple has a marketing department that does a really good job of looking out for Apple. Our job is to earn a living as a business. And if we earn a living like you do, is you pick the tool that helps you to meet the deadlines with the budget that you've got. And
half of my consulting clients who were using Final Cut Pro 6 or 7 have already gone to 10, and they're very happy with it.
Well, and the thing, what I would say is that if someone asked me, what would you edit a film on? I would edit a film on Avid. I wouldn't do a long form in Final Cut 10.
That's interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, because the scalability and managing that number of objects and everything else. But if I'm going to do ENG, like a 5-minute ENG that I'm going to shoot out here on the floor, I would absolutely do that in Final Cut 10.
You might use iMovie.
GC in Toronto saying, doesn't Autodesk's strategy with Smoke kind of mirror Apple's strategy?
Exactly. That's what really impressed me about Sunday, is that what happened is Apple, like Red, decided to change the market, the perception of what editing is in the market, and forced every editor to suddenly wake up and say, wait a minute, what are we really doing here? What industry are we in? And Smoke did exactly the same thing. They dropped their price from $15,000 to $3,400. They put in a timeline interface. They redid the interface. They've made it much more accessible to timeline-based editors. And they are doing the same kind of disruptive thing to their market that Apple did to Final Cut 10. And then we look at what Avid is doing.
And are they getting the same reaction from pros?
Oh, my goodness. The doors have blown open.
The thing is
Smoke, just for people who don't know what Smoke does?
Smoke is an editing and finishing tool that basically allows you to bring your video in, do final grade effects, color grading, color correction, brews coffee, slices bread, tucks you in bed at night, and it delivers the final master for output.
So it's the last stage.
Well, it can be the last stage. I think that one of the things that when you walk into a commercial house, so a post house that's going to be doing this Smoke is the kind, obviously some of them will have Flame and bigger versions of it, but for a lot of the stuff where we're just going to finish off, we're going to cut your commercial together and know that when we finish and leave that day, you have a finished commercial. We were able to edit it together. We were able to add.
Not just finished, but gorgeous.
Yeah, Exactly. And you can do all the fine editing, all the color correction, you can pull the green screens and do all the pieces with a lot of control. You use something like Smoke, and Smoke started, I don't even know what the price was. It was like at $60,000 or $100,000, and then it moved to $15,000, which was a big step, I think, for Autodesk. And the reality is, until this new interface came out with Smoke, I don't think that it made sense to go to $3,500 because it's not, or $34.95 or whatever, because it's not a, it was heavy lifting to learn it. You know, and I think that it's changing dramatically when they put out the public beta in June.
Mm-hmm. I thought Autodesk was really smart in the sense that we don't care what you do your editing on, what you create on Final Cut, Avid, we'll take that timeline in, and now we'll do essentially what the finished pass would be, color correction, titling, any effects, and you have a platform. And see, I think that's where I was always frustrated with Final Cut, was that you learn your own workarounds how to make something work. But to finish a project, it was a umpteen number of plugins that never talked to each other. So I love what they're doing. Take all that out. Timeline goes out. Media goes out. Here we are in this platform where now we can do anything to make your project shine. And, I do a lot of color correction work where I work on lusters. So for me, looking at that, I like the interface on Smoke more than I do working on lusters when I'm doing 4K movies on them.
Now, I should point out, these are still Mac products. Is there anything Apple needs to do to keep the Pro in line? Do they need to keep the Mac Pro, do they need to update it?
The Mac Pro is so important.
Professionals need a Mac Pro.
Yeah. I mean,
you can't do it on an iMac.
Well, actually, they made Smoke so you can work on an iMac.
And in fact, I'm told a lot of editors using laptops now.
I mean, Thunderbolt, I don't think we would be having this conversation today at this NAB with 4K and these products if Thunderbolt never got introduced.
I just want to make sure I wasn't the first one to say it.
Oh,
you were the only one who's ever said that.
Oh, no.
Daryl is giving you two votes.
Yeah, see?
Thunderbolt is the biggest thing, I think, that's going to happen to media. It's opening the doors.
You need that speed to move massive files.
You need that speed, but the simplicity that the consumer, anybody who buys a Mac, can plug into that and have speed and accessibility, the tools that are just amazing.
Well, so we need a Mac Pro with Thunderbolt. We don't have one.
Right, yeah.
Except, Leo, there's a small problem.
Uh-oh.
And that's 4K on Thunderbolt, because Thunderbolt isn't fast enough to support
we need
4K.
We also need Fiber Thunderbolt or Lightpeak.
Yeah, Fiber Thunderbolt to be able to do 4K.
But that's coming too. So do you think that's what's holding Apple back, is that they don't want to release a Mac Pro with copper-based Thunderbolt? They want to wait till that fiber-based Thunderbolt's ready. And I understand it's close to ready.
I mean, there's so many peripherals that, there's so many things that are based on the copper-based one. I mean, you can add...
There's at least a dozen.
No, there's plenty. I mean, there's...
Actually, if you go over to the Blackmagic booth, we'll talk about that Blackmagic camera a little bit. If you go over to the Blackmagic booth, they certainly are
I mean, there's great adapters I'm seeing for going Thunderbolt to fiber. I mean, there's all kinds of great ways to get that information out of your computer, not that bandwidth bottleneck that's going away.
Right. The other cool thing is that we now have a Thunderbolt adapter, which goes to a PCI card. So you can plug in a PCI card, take Thunderbolt out of an iMac, go to the PCI card, and then do whatever you want to do with it. You can use it for monitoring, you can use it for ingest, you can use it for output. And not just in the Blackmagic booth, but as Alex will attest when he was doing his 1,000 videos yesterday, Thunderbolt is everywhere on the floor.
Well, when you start seeing these cameras, I mean, I think it's the 500 or whatever has a Thunderbolt.
Yeah, it has
cable right coming right out of
the
camera.
All right, we're going to take a break.
Next Firewire.
I do want to talk about that. There's new stuff from Red. I want to talk about the Blackmagic Cinema camera, which is a very interesting. Some say it's a free camera because the software you get is worth more than the camera costs. So the camera, we'll just throw that in for free. And we finally know what Philippe Starck is working on for Apple. The truth finally comes out. We have a very interesting panel here at NAB 2012. Larry Jordan from Digital Production Buzz, Daryl Okada from the ASC.com, Alan Tepper from AlanTepper.com and the Pro Video Coalition, and of course his podcast, which I should give you credit for, which is because it's in both Castilian, Spanish, and English, the audio Technotour, the audio, video, and telephony podcast.
Technotour.
And of course Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps. More in just a moment, but first I'd like to tell you a little bit about our friends at Citrix, who have a great product for people who want to do online meeting. It's called GoToMeeting. uses the great Citrix remote access backbone that makes it possible for you to share your screen with everybody. In fact, you can have meetings of up to 300 people and share your screen, and they can share their screen, and you could work together, you can collaborate, but now you can also see them. And for this crew, that's probably really important. They're all video-focused. And it's true, when you're selling, when you're working, when you're collaborating, the best way to work together is to be able to see that frown, those folded arms, the smile. To get to know your coworkers, your clients, in video makes a huge difference. And that's where GoToMeeting is just blowing the lid off this. HD Faces looks so good. The quality is amazing.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference when you're actually looking at the person you're having a meeting with.
Yeah.
You want to see them frown when you give them the budget and go, oh, I probably should have pulled that back. You know?
Exactly. That you're missing all of that input if you're just talking on the phone. For product collaboration, for planning meetings, for weekly status updates, and, of course, for pitch meetings, there's nothing like GoToMeeting. Everybody's got a camera now. Oh, and one more thing. It now works on the iPad. So you can meet with the built-in camera on the iPad, plug your headphones in, talk the whole thing over the internet. You could be sitting in the park and attending a meeting on GoToMeeting. It's really amazing. Here's the deal. Try it free for 30 days. That's all we ask. Not going to cost you anything. Visit GoToMeeting.com. There's an orange try it free button there. Click that orange try it free button. And the offer code is for this show, MacBreak, I think. Is that right? Yes, MacBreak. So if you go to meeting.com, click the orange try it free button, use the offer code MacBreak, then download the free iPad app or, and give it a try on the iPad as well. Go to meeting.com, Mac or PC. It works great, completely cross-platform. Offer code MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support. So I'm going to save the Blackmagic camera, the free camera. Because I think I like that. But before we get to Red and its announcements, have we talked about everything about Final Cut that people will need to know about the next? They didn't give you a date for release, did they?
There were two things that I asked. One is when, and they said 2012. They aren't going to be
That's
more specific.
This year, anyway.
That's this year. You know, good news there. And the other said, can you speculate on what hardware is coming? Because I agree with Daryl that we need to
have Mac Pros.
The Mac Pros.
Darren.
Sorry, Darren.
You're acting like Leo now.
Did I call you Daryl? I'm so sorry.
See, I just want to let you know I listen to you. And it's your fault.
Apparently, I don't listen to my producers.
You're listening astray.
Darren Okada. He's a Simamanamahar.
But I agree that the Mac Pro is critical, and I asked if they're going to be able to commit to any hardware, and they all said no. But there is one piece of gossip that I do anticipate. I said, are you guys coming out with any new software that's going to work with Motion and Compressor and Final Cut? And all their faces suddenly got stiff.
Oh, that's a good sign.
So they've got something else that's bubbling away in the corner. One thought is Logic Pro 10. But I think the one huge piece that's missing is something dealing with audio. A replacement for Soundtrack.
So Logic is, of course, audio. Soundtrack is getting a little long in the tooth.
Soundtrack is dead. Not just long in a tooth.
You can't get it.
It's buried. You can't get it. So we'll just have to see. But there's something else coming, and hopefully we'll find out more this year.
Yeah, very interesting.
And yes, that's it.
That's it for Final Cut. Will it be a free upgrade, a downloadable upgrade? Or
so far, from what I've been told, there's no way to charge for an upgrade on the
right.
Mac App Store.
Right.
And they're committed to the App Store for two reasons. One, the license is more flexible with the App Store, and you can download any application you buy in a Mac App Store to three computers. But the second, Apple is committed to sandboxing, which, as you know, is being able to restrict what applications have access to
right.
operating system
right.
for security purposes. And they really want to have stuff be sandboxed to improve the security of the Mac. So Apple is completely committed to having Mac App Store upgrades, which means they're free in the foreseeable future.
Until they go to Final Cut 11.
Leo, we got enough problems with 10. Gracious.
But the marketing campaign's so great for Final Cut 11, I'm just saying. Real opportunity there. All right, Red announced. we did actually. We went out there and met with the Red folks, and they're making noises like they want to set up the studio with Red cameras.
I think that would be great.
What am I going to do? 4K? I can't.
But you can put it on. You can put it on YouTube. You know, YouTube can handle.
I can 4K. Put it on YouTube.
You can put 4K on
well,
YouTube.
All right, maybe that's.
There isn't a monitor on the planet that displays 4K.
There are monitors on the planet that display.
There's three of them here.
Yeah, everybody's going to have.
Retina displays on everything soon.
But Leo, don't you want to future-proof everything you're shooting at Twit so that to make sure that everyone can see every little detail?
10 years from now.
These shows have less shelf life than the fish you bought yesterday. There's no reason that they should be shot in any archival form whatsoever. In fact, I'm going to erase the tapes right now.
Leo, there's already comment that they want to see your face in 4K.
No, they do not. Although, actually, we're shooting with these Vixias. They're actually better than studio cameras from a few years ago. They're 1080p cameras. And I was looking at myself yesterday and said, I'm getting some makeup. This is bad. This is. And so 4K, in fact, 4K is so good you can't even use makeup. You have to do something else.
Sandpaper,
because you see the makeup.
Yeah.
One of the things I did see, I think it was in the Sony booth, is that, of course, they're doing 4K workflows and some beautiful 216 PPI OLED displays for reference monitors. And that really brought home to me, even in a small screen, a 13 or a 20-inch screen, a Retina display is going to transform everything, and not just video, but
one of
everything.
That you get used to looking at your iPad.
You cannot.
And you keep on looking. Everything looks low resolution after that.
It looks slightly blurry.
Yeah, blurry and jaggy.
Annoying.
Unless you're Alex's wife.
She's fine with it. She's really fine with
SD. She looks at you were telling the story. She looks at standard def?
No, she just... Carlita will watch.
She watches I Love Lucy. She doesn't care.
No, she'll just watch Oprah or whatever. I'll walk in and she's watching Oprah and it'll be in standard def. And I'll go, you know, it's sharper at 704.
Let me explain something about wives. It's not that they want to watch in standard def. It's that the TV system you and I have set up is so damn complicated. They don't know how to watch. They're glad they got it. They're glad they're seeing the show.
I admit that there are a few cables connected to my TV.
How many remote controls?
I'm trying to get it all into the iPhone. Because we all have iPhones, including the kids.
So it would even be more complicated.
The worst is when she thinks she has it figured out, what will happen is I'll be in the back house and I'll accidentally select the front Apple TV while I'm doing stuff, and suddenly I start, why isn't this working? And then I get this text like, stop playing with your iPhone.
Not just wives, but spouses.
Yes.
And I think it generally comes from the fact that they're just glad they could get anything at all on TV.
Yes,
it doesn't. SDHD, I'm not gonna complain at this point. But we are moving to Retina displays. We are moving, I think, to 4K. I've been, I hate 3D so much, and I've just been saying, make it 4K.
Well, didn't it feel like everyone's backing off on 3D this year? I mean, pretty much that was, last year was the big year.
Praise the Lord, hallelujah.
And now it's all like, we have all this bandwidth now, so we'll move to 4K.
Right. Well, it's so much, I mean, to me, looking at things on a Retina display, high resolution, I get more of a sense of depth with that without having glasses on.
I agree.
Then it's real. It's vivid. Then I do having sort of an art of,
Jim
Cameron's going to kick my ass again.
Well, even Cameron's kind of hedging his bet because his 5D system does involve 4K and higher frame rates, right? And ultimately, you could forget about the we got 4K and higher frame rates, 3D. You could wear the glasses or not.
Actually, the higher frame rate and higher resolution does create an unbelievable sense of three dimensions. And I'm happy that we've got to this point at this NAB where we're looking at high resolution, also high dynamic range displays are going to be coming.
Tell me
out.
About that. What is? So I know about HDR still photography.
Right. There are several companies working on something that goes beyond the sort of the Rec 709 specification. So you actually can get much brighter whites with detail and really rich blacks so that it does... Remember the first time you looked at a plasma display with a native HD feed? It looked like glass.
Right.
Well, this looks like there's an aquarium behind it.
Wow.
It is so amazing.
And the Blackmagic camera is one of them, by the way.
So we have to upgrade everything from the beginning to the end, though, to get that.
You can, or if you're originating in sort of in raw files, like... and you have the full resolution of these cameras now, you can remaster that material.
So the data's there.
The data's there. You can bring it up so you can display it in a way that compels the audience to look at it.
Similarly to when you do a raw photo.
Right.
Right.
You don't
have
need
more
three
latitude.
Images. You have so much more latitude.
Yeah.
You can often do HDR.
Exactly. I mean, there's plenty of room to do things. And that's, you know, that's sort of like the same area of repurposing content from going, you know, like the I Love Lucy shows. Oh, they can watch it in HD, except it's 4:3.
Right.
But you're seeing something that you didn't see before, right, because you're getting more details.
You know where you see that is those old original Star Trek episodes, which they've done now, remastered.
Oh, yeah.
They took film, of course, so they had some extra data.
Right.
And they were able to rescan those and then redo the CGIs, and it's like you're watching a new show. It's amazing.
It's, I mean, that, you know, not that, I mean, the old days of video production, SD video production, unfortunately, unless you're going to do something really special and expensive with that, which is like put it through like a Lowry type process where you're reconstructing pixels, that's the one like great thing about film yet. I know we can talk about film a little, but you can take that stuff out of the vault, rescan it with a new technology, and have it be...
The film has the data.
The film has incredible data there, and have a whole new product that you didn't pay that much to repurpose.
What I always think is interesting when you look at Blu-ray, you know, we open up a Blu-ray, I think we've talked about this on the show, but you realize how hard it is to keep things in focus.
Yeah.
Because when you're watching it in the theater, it's pretty soft.
Right.
I mean, the reality is it's pretty soft. It's fifth generation, third generation, something like that. And when you watch it on your standard def, it wasn't. But when you watch it in it's in less compressed, you know, Blu-ray, you suddenly realize that half the movie
was out of focus.
Was out of focus. Which makes me feel a lot better when I'm trying to pull focus.
In fact, that was the complaint that, I don't know, was it you? Or no, it was Brent Bye was having about the Super 35 digital camera format, is that you do have such shallow depth of field. You're using great lenses. It's very hard to pull focus.
Oh,
he says you need an AC, you need an assistant cinematographer to pull focus because it's so hard to keep focus on these things.
I mean, it's a fine control. Fraction of an inch. But
Canon has kind of addressed that because they've got gearing now on these cinematographer lenses that is much more like what you're used to, where it's much, you know, a much larger movement to do a much smaller change.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference between the sort of the DSLR model and a purpose-built cinema camera because, those tools, you know, pulling focus on a still lens was never designed to do that. But if you could, you know, if you're pulling focus on a lens that's geared to do that, you can do it more reliably. It's like riding a bike. You start to know, oh, Alex is right there. I'll just go right to here and he's there.
Yeah.
And the reason for it is that it's the creative look. You know, you're throwing that background softer. You're bringing the attention to where you want it.
You want that depth of field. It's just you have to work with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a storytelling element to it. Not that you have to use it all the time.
Well, and to me, that's 3D. to be honest,
well,
you know.
Oddly enough, one of the things that, not knowing about 3D, I mean, you know, one of the things that, you know, as a cinematographer we strive for is creating that
dimension.
Sense of dimension in the frame where you know it's flat, but then you feel that there's depth going on. And we do it with, it's either dolly moves where you feel perspective changing, lighting, colors, you know, all of that. And to me, that's part of telling the story. You know, just capturing reality for reality's sake is a sports show.
Speaking of sports, we did go over to the Panasonic booth and see the new 3D cameras. They're going to shoot much of the Olympics with 3D. Now, that could be the Avatar moment for television for 3D.
Because I think sports, in a lot of ways, I think that big sports are very complicated to do in 3D. Because of the interaxial distance has to be so far apart between the cameras, and does it really make sense to jump from something close up to something far away? But I think there are definitely Olympic sports that, you know, that are, you know, boxing, wrestling,
gymnastics.
I think those ones that are a smaller area where the cameras can have a natural view of that.
Well, finally, archery is going to be exciting. The arrow coming at you.
And you know they're going to put like a little, they're going to put them right over
right in the bullseye so you can nail that lens.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, geez. it is Mac Break Weekly, so I suppose we probably shouldn't spend a huge amount of time on the Red camera and all that. Although
they're past 4K now.
They're 5K,
Well, no, they're 6K now. I mean, 6K is the next
Sony,
chip on the way.
Sony has 8K cameras, but you can't do anything with
it. Well, it's
oversampling. Although they said they can preserve the 8K data. So that if someday down the road we can handle 8K files, you've got the data there. This is, you know, that same thing. it's been stored.
You know, I was talking with Ned Soltz, who is a contributing editor for Digital Video Magazine and knows more about cameras than most people on the planet. And he and I were talking. He said, one of the things that's cool about 4K is that it downsamples to 1080p with no problem,
right,
so that you can easily get a high-quality picture from it. You can't easily downsample 6K, and you can't easily downsample...
That's why you go to 8.
But even with 8, you're throwing away 75% of the pixels that you're shooting, and you've got massive data storage, and you've got a problem with file transfers. Other than that, it's, I mean, you can't store it, you can't move it, and you can't do anything with it, and it's too big. Other than that, I think it's a perfect format.
But one thing we've learned, Larry, and I learned this because we did a 1080p podcast a few years ago called Mac Break that we couldn't edit, we couldn't watch, we couldn't do anything with, and yet... Yeah. 1080p is commonplace now, and that's just a few years later. 4K will be ready in a few, you know. You couldn't edit video out of the RED camera for a while, right?
Yeah. Well,
now
and,
you can.
And when we did the first, you know, when we did the first Mac break.
Well,
we did it all hand. So the very first Mac break was handheld, and it was like on a DVC or a Panasonic, you know, 100A or whatever. So that was easy. It was all
DVD. It was
DVD.
Practically SD.
It was SD. You know, okay. So it was SD 16x9. We put it up there. And then we shot that week. We shot about 8 episodes for Mac Break, you know, with Leo there and everything else. And we shot them, and literally it took another like 3 weeks to figure out how we were actually going to put this together.
What do we do?
And it was like, and there was this because we shot them on F950s, uncompressed, and you know, this is, you know, whatever, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and so there was this huge morass of us trying to figure out how to do it. So then I did this little road to 1080p, which was me doing like a John Madden. By the way, that is the most downloaded Mac Break ever.
The road to 1080p, because everybody wants to know, how the hell do you do this?
Yeah, so I said, well, this is what we're doing. And the only reason I was doing it was buy time so that I can put out the one that was, because I was like, because I'm still on the road. I'm not
but
to the house
my
yet.
Point being, that was only 5 or 6
well,
years ago,
yeah, exactly.
And we'll be 8K in a few years. It's just going to happen. We're very close now really to handling 4K no problem, right?
I think the big challenge is the marketing that happened with the TVs has gotten so many people to buy into the 1080p that I think that getting the next rev of that is going to be difficult.
Well, there was an interesting comment made about 4K in that if you think about where theatrical release is, they look at where the consumer is and they say, what can we do to make the theatrical experience better? As consumers are now adopting 1080p,
right,
the 4K is necessary for theatrical just to be able to say, go to the theater because you see something different. Same thing with 3D. 3D became theatrical to give a reason for people to go to the theaters. As that starts to move into the house, again, with your Olympics example, we're going to have to look for something different. I like what Darren is saying about higher frame rates. I think that's going to have an incredible benefit to making 24p, which has got more motion blur than picture in it. I think 48k or 48 frames a second makes a lot better picture.
What, so it Cameron, may be that Cameron's going to 120, isn't he?
He's talking, yeah, if he can get the bandwidth.
It's all about file size, baby.
Yeah,
bandwidth and file size.
It's also how many pipes can you run
right
from your playback server, and
how many
can
pixels
the server give it to you?
Yeah, right.
Into the projection device.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, the smaller the smaller the resolution, of course, the more bandwidth, the more frames you can get.
But we're now operating with Moore's law.
Right.
And that means it's moving faster. You know, that's what's interesting. That's what's really changed, is that these things are happening at a huge pace that we've never seen before, because now we're talking Moore's law as opposed to physical
laws. And the 4K
laws.
Story here at NAB is not only about the cameras. It's also about a Mac-related product from AJA, which is the KeyPro 4K,
right,
which is the new KeyPro portable that can record 4K.
Wait a minute.
And they have it particularly matched.
It's a portable...
It's just a Key Pro, but it records in 4K.
It's called the Key Pro Quad.
Yeah, Key Pro Quad, and
to a hard drive.
And they're
SSD.
SSD cards,
and they are matching it with the Canon camera that you mentioned earlier, the C500.
It's amazing.
In fact, there are some video recordings where the CEO of AJA and of Canon talk about how well they work together
in 4K.
Yes,
a portable.
Same. And here's the crazy thing:
4K.
Same price.
Same price.
It's like $4,000, $39.95.
Yeah, $4,000.
Because I was expecting them to say like $6,000, $8,000.
With a built-in 16x9 monitor to preview what you're doing.
I'm telling you, Moore's
Law. Or to play back.
And they came out with another thing called the KeyPro Rack, which is a rack-based KeyPro, which emulates a deck. trying to blank on the deck, but you've now got an HD SDI deck and an HD cam deck for $4,000. Wow. Instead of spending $70,000 or $80,000, it's now HD SDI out off a Key Pro.
Well, and that rack mount is really, really important, because I know that Sound Devices just came out with a PIX 260, which is a rack mount version, which is what we really needed out of the 240. And then Blackmagic, of course, has the studio recorder that we have, and we have a little bit of all of those sitting around in the office. And the issue is that rack mount, you know, when you start having a whole lot of records, or you need it to be portable and show up with a kit that's ready to go, becomes super important, as well as seeing all of these continue to progress to SSD. I mean, SSD, the two things that make all of this possible is SSD and Thunderbolt, because you know these are the two pieces that without those you can't even talk about this kind of bandwidth. And right. I think that, again, we just to touch back on Thunderbolt for a second, while in CES we don't need to talk about it because it doesn't mean anything to anyone, this is the next FireWire. And now we're starting to see cameras, you know, whether it's the C500 that's shipping with Thunderbolt built into it, or the new Blackmagic camera, which is a straight Thunderbolt output.
Yes, it is.
I think we're going to start seeing more and more cameras, at least at the production level, the 5,000 and above, start to ship with Thunderbolt connections, because it makes a lot of sense from an uncompressed. And that's the new. You didn't have anything. We got into this never land where you had HDMI, which has to be converted, or you had FireWire, which everyone's discontinuing, and now you have another option not too far away.
The key benefit is the new Ivy Bridge chip that Intel is coming out with later this month, because when the first Thunderbolt chips were released, it took 6 chips to create a Thunderbolt connection, which required remachining all of your hard disks and all of your cameras to fit that new daughter board in. With the new Ivy Bridge chip, which ships at the end of April, we're able to fit that into a much smaller packet, which means now the same engineering that fits hard disks or cameras can work with a small chip.
Was that one of the big delays? Was that 6 chip?
It was a huge delay, because everybody had to go through multi-$100 million re-engineering costs to get... The chips required an extra half inch of space, and there wasn't a half inch of space in the hard drives. So by getting the chipset down, they can now put it onto the main motherboard within the hard disk or the RAID or the camera without having to have that extra half inch of space for the daughter board. So I had a conversation yesterday with one of the hard disk developers to say, is there a performance difference between the Sandy Bridge chips, the original ones, and the Ivy Bridge chips, the current ones? And the performance is the same. So we're not going to have to worry about, like we were doing with the Oxford chips, I've got a 911 or a 922 or a 944 determining how fast my FireWire is. The speed of Thunderbolt won't change, assuming copper. When you change the chipset, you're just going to get smaller space, which means we can put it in more devices.
I got to say, going from SSD to SSD, like my internal drive is SSD, and we had something we had captured on a PIX 240, and SSD to SSD is 220 megabytes a second. You know, it's like, you know, to edit, you know, 200 gigs in like 17 minutes, from the pure geek in me was very. I was just like, I can't believe. I just want people to, when they complain about things, I just want them to know what it used to be like. You know, we used to have SCSI, and you know, and we were trying to get 30 megs a second out of it. We had to restripe the drives every week to make sure that we could get 30 megs a second out of our Media 100. And now look at this.
It's sad when nobody cares what we went through before.
In the old days.
I don't think you understand that I had to walk backwards through the snow up the hill.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we got to talk about this Blackmagic. Because I think that's a fascinating example of what's happening. In fact, everything that Blackmagic does is really pushing the bottom end in amazing ways.
That camera and a couple of other things.
Yeah, there's a couple other things.
And a couple of other things. All right. Well, a little Blackmagic coming up in just a bit. We're doing Mac Break Weekly live from the NAB show, the National Association of Broadcasters, which we have redubbed NAC, the National Association of Content Creators, because that's really what it is. And I know this is a little bit of a different Mac Break Weekly, because instead of talking about iOS, we're talking about, stuff that you can use on your Mac. How about that?
Crazy.
But we will talk about those cameras. We do have some other Mac news also coming up in just a bit. Before I do that, though, let's talk a little bit about FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks for small businesses is a lifesaver. If you are doing, you know, everybody who listens probably invoices from time to time as a way to get paid. And if you're doing it by hand, or you're doing it in Pages or Word, and oh my gosh, it's just the worst. In fact, so bad that, at least for me, I would put off invoicing, which means I'd be putting off getting paid, sometimes so long that I never did get paid. FreshBooks solves all that. When Amber MacArthur told me about it in 2004, I started using it. And now there are millions of people, 3.5 million to be exact, who use FreshBooks to do their invoices. Take a look. Go to FreshBooks.com. You upload your logo. You upload your hours. They have a time and hours app for the iPhone. They also have time and hours apps for the web that automatically import time and hours if you use those. You will have these invoices going out in email. And in the email, there's a button that says, just pay this using one of 11 payment gateways like PayPal, Authorize.net, First Data. So believe it or not, that's almost a sure way to get paid faster because, frankly, your clients just want to pay it. They just want to make it easy. You can even have an automatic payment set up, an automatic invoicing set up, so you don't even have to get involved. There's invoice follow-up. If you don't get paid, you can automatically have tickler in emails sent out every 30, 60, and 90 days. It looks so professional. It's so easy to do. And if you have an old-fashioned client who does want a paper invoice, FreshBooks can do that too. They'll print it out, stamp it, and mail it for a small additional fee. By the way, any currency. This is nowadays we work worldwide. I was really happy because I was billing in Canadian dollars as well as U.S. dollars. It saved me a lot of trouble. I bet Alan would love to be able to bill in Castilian dollars.
You mean euros or the old peseta, which may be coming back?
Is it coming back? I guess
they're talking about that. They're talking about all the countries possibly going back to their original currency.
That'll be good for FreshBooks because it's automatic.
It won't be good for anyone else.
Everybody else will go crazy. Try it right now by going to FreshBooks.com. 30 days of unlimited use, absolutely free. 30 days absolutely free. As many clients as you want. Use it as much as you want. I got to warn you, though, you're going to get to the end of 30 days and you're going to say, this is it. I'm never going back to the old way of doing invoices. It is the best. FreshBooks.com. Try it free for 30 days right now. You're going to love it. And we thank them. And I love it. And it was a lifesaver for me. I actually didn't bill somebody for 8 months. That was a fun one to try to collect.
I have projects I never got paid for just because I didn't get around to invoicing.
It's my fault. I can't really blame them. I never asked them for money. Well, I'm glad those days are over. Now I just don't get paid at all. So everybody invoices me. It's a whole new world. So Black Magic, what is the story of Black Magic anyway?
So I think Black Magic started building hardware for AJA. Was that right? They were kind of the hardware supplier for AJA.
Correct.
And then they decided that they could do it.
There is some overlap, isn't there, in the category? In fact,
there was some overlap, and
not anymore.
They've separated. I mean, they're very different companies. I mean, there's places where they overlap, but where they started was Blackmagic building cards for AJA. So they were building their capture cards.
And they both make cards now, and they do compete.
Da Vinci,
the Kona card from AJA, the Blackmagic Decklink Extreme.
Kona, and then they also use those. That's right.
Mini converters. They have mini converters from AJA.
We use those.
Mini converters from Blackmagic.
And they both have box-based interfaces also, either to connect via PCIe or ExpressCard 34 or now Thunderbolt.
And I think that what's
changed... We use the incredible Blackmagic router, video router.
We have lots of those.
In our studio. That thing is incredible. 72 in, 144 out, and we've already outgrown it.
You know, you can't have too many connections in a router.
Like, it's amazing.
I think I've said this already. I accidentally bought a 16x16 and a 16x32.
And you just kept them because use them.
I was going to send one back. Within a week, we had saturated both of them.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that while AJA really seems to focus on, R&D and building the products and so on and so forth, one of the things Blackmagic has done is said, we really have a business model that works. And what we're going to do is keep on absorbing companies that maybe not have a great product, but not necessarily a good business model. And we're going to show them what they should have done. I think that's part of it. Is like, it really should, like the one that we saw with, and part of it is you can't do it without the Blackmagic wraparound. I mean, I think that's part of it. But like when you look at Teranex, Teranex is the state of the art when it comes to conversion tools, conversion hardware. And all of us, dream of having a Teranex in our house. I mean, I don't know. I dream of it all the time.
Some people dream of women.
I dream of Teranex.
You're going to attach it to your high-definition set, and no one is going to be able to watch television anymore.
And this is a scalar cross-converter. It's this kind of Swiss Army knife that lets you do all kinds of stuff with video. But they're usually $15,000 or $20,000 to start.
No.
The case is $20,000. And then they go up, and by the time you add little boards to them, it's $100,000. So Blackmagic bought them, and now they announced this week that they're going to release the single channel one, I think, for $2,000, and the multi channel for $4,000 in June. And Yeah, I was.
They dropped it from 20 down to 2. That's news to me. I hadn't heard.
It's $2,000 for the single channel, $4,000 for the multi-channel, for the dual channel, and yeah. Suddenly, oh, and there's Thunderbolt built in.
I'm getting my checkbook out. I can afford that now.
So
I'm going to give up the helicopter. I'm going to get the Teranex.
And it's got Thunderbolt built in, so you basically can do all the cross conversions, and then import it like as if it was a multi-bridge.
What's nice about it too is what Teranex did and what it still does, which is great for like when I'm cutting on Final Cut Pro, is takes your video in and cleans it up incredibly. Mm-hmm. Better than what a lot of software tools can do.
Yeah. So anyway,
so let's talk about this cinema camera. And
you keep saying that, but then you never talk about
it. I want to talk about it.
It's a tease. That's what it's called.
Teasing is over.
Take
control. I'm going to pay out right now. This is the free camera because it comes with so much software that you end up. What was this? But it's like $2,500.
$29.99.
It's a digital. What is new? What is it? What is this?
There's been so many.
What
of
am
us
I looking at? It's 2.5K.
For 5 years, a lot of us have sat around saying, what we really need is a box with a sensor. Like, we don't want them to go crazy.
Don't pay for anything else.
Like, for something in the studio, I'm shooting some green screen, I'm doing some other stuff, I'm shooting a little show. I don't need you to add a whole bunch of other things. I just need something that connects well with my computer. And, this is it.
With a large sensor.
With a large sensor. Four-thirds sensor.
Approximately. The crop factor is about 2.3 with this.
The thing that's interesting about this is the 13-stop dynamic range. That's huge, isn't it?
Yes, when you record in the RAW mode, which is a 12-bit RAW mode, which is amazing.
So
most
cameras are 10-bit.
We got 10-bit when we stretched to something like ProRes 422 or DNX HD. But before that, everything was 8-bit.
8-bit.
8-bit. We're really excited when we're able to record either to ProRes 422 or DNX HD at 10-bit. But now this is RAW at 12-bit.
Yeah.
So what
does that mean?
It just the dynamic range. I mean, I think Darren's probably the best one.
It's one better than 11.
It means two things. You've got a really rich color space for doing color correction and color adjustments. And the 12-bit means that you've got a lot of distance for exposure. So you're getting a really deep color space for color correction and color adjustments and a really deep range for color for exposure so you don't have the shadows compressed to black and the whites go...
So this
levels of gray.
This is like shooting raw on a... Forgive me for it, a poor man's analogy. But it's like shooting raw on a digital still camera. It's great, but you're going to have to do post-production.
Right.
Post-correction.
But that's how you get the 13 stops. It's as if you're approaching it as exactly that, a digital still camera.
In fact, they're
camera.
Storing them as DNGs.
Yeah, it's like a negative.
Right.
So you have full range, and then you take it and make it look the way you want. That's why they're giving you the $1,000
DaVinci software. Because you can't do anything with that.
The only mode to record. You can record either with that or with ProRes 422 HQ. But if you're planning to do... what's called grading or color correction, then you want to do it in the RAW mode. And if you're doing something rush and you just want to get it on the air quickly, then you would probably go with the ProRes 422 HQ. Yeah. Would you agree?
And the big thing for cinematographers is that this gives you a much larger target in the field.
When you
have that much data, the big thing is that what I think a lot of cinematographers didn't like about digital when it started was that the target is a pinpoint target. There was no correction that was available. If you didn't hit it on, in the field, and that's not a skill of the camera operator or the DP. There are 1,000 moving parts on a film, and there's all these things, and you have to get the shoot done. And, you're not going to hit the mark every single time of a perfect exposure for every piece because there's just too many variables to deal with. And with digital, you were screwed, right?
Well, digital, before it, you were locked into what was coming out of the camera has the contrast, the color, everything exactly the way you want to put it up on the monitor.
Very little latitude.
Yeah, no latitude at all. It was meant to go right to air. And until the wider range cameras came out, taking the signal and making it more of a log signal rather than a linear signal. So in essence, that's why the images look flat, like with the Cine style on the D5s. It's basically trying to give you everything that the sensor is picking up, but within a manageable package, so you can actually use it on your computer.
Leo, just another thought. The RED camera shoots a RAW format as well.
Right.
And you'd have to take that into color correction before you do anything with it. So the workflow of RED is shoot it, color correct it, and then release it. Same thing with the Blackmagic is shoot it, color correct
if you use that setting. Yeah.
If you shoot RAW. Anything that shoots RAW, you have to take into color correction.
You're not going to shoot 2.5K, though. You're going to shoot 1080p.
In the RAW mode, you do.
What do you do with that extra half K?
Crop it, either crop it or scale it down. Yeah. And that's what we were discussing a little bit in the pre-show.
Gives you a little extra information.
So you could either blow up or scale it down. If you scale it down, then you're
oversampling. So it's a very forgiving camera in the sense that if you point it slightly wrong and you don't light quite right and all of that, you can fix it.
That's if you shoot in the RAW mode. If you shoot in the ProRes 422 HQ mode, then it's scaled down to 1080p
right in the recording.
Yeah. Well, and this is another one of those cameras that we were talking about a little bit that has Thunderbolt built right in, so you just plug that straight into your computer to do the digitization.
Now, have you noticed that Leo is about to ask the most important question?
What the hell is this for?
Does it have a lens?
Does it have a lens?
No, not included. Here's the ad that should come out. Yeah. With this, no screwy lens mount. Finally,
who's using Canon? So I can use my Canon lenses,
and
with
you
this?
Can also use a Nikon.
Oh, does it have a Nikon mount?
I think they've got two mounts.
Okay,
so I don't care if it comes with lenses because I have some Canon glass or I have some Nikon glass.
I'm also very happy that unlike most of the traditional video cameras like the ones that we're seeing in front of us, the traditional video cameras are using this old-fashioned FAT32 formatting. And Blackmagic has decided to use the HFS Plus, also known as Mac OS Extended Plus. That's what they're using. So we no longer have to have this nonsense of the sequential files.
Yeah. Every four gigs.
Approximately 4 gigabytes. It's just nonsense, and a lot of the camera manufacturers still do this FAT32, and I'm so glad that Blackmagic decided to do something better. Basically, there are two options that are very good. One is the HFS Plus, and one is UDF. UDF is what Sound Devices chose to use with their recorders, which is wonderful. It's completely universal as far as reading, either on Windows 7 or on Mac. And the HFS Plus can be read, obviously, on a Mac, and on Windows all you need is Mac Drive, which is, in worst case scenario, $50 utility.
Well, this isn't just a camera that gets connected in. It's got an SSD drive built on the other side of that camera. So you can just pop an SSD in, do the recording, pull it out.
Removable. Exactly.
So really, this is kind of a response to the DSLR crowd.
That's exactly right. Except it's not a DSLR camera. It's a video camera,
which means it's all video.
It'll run without having the sensor overheat, which you can't do with a DSLR.
Good point.
Because you only shoot for 20 minutes and the sensor overheats and you got to stop.
Is it a CMOS? Do you still have the rubbery rolling shutter issue?
Yeah, I think it's a CMOS sensor.
I think almost everything's a CMOS at this point.
So you're going to have that issue with motion still.
But that's relatively easy to fix. Just about all software, Premiere, Final Cut can dial that out.
You know, there's
out.
An interesting thing about CMOS that keeps my 950 busy, is that my 950 is a CCD. It turns out that CMOS doesn't shoot iPads very well.
No, it starts to flicker. Yeah.
So my 950 keeps on getting by various houses, keeps on renting. Hey, do you still have that 950 over there? Because the CCD shoots it fine.
Isn't that funny?
The other nice thing about the Blackmagic Cinema camera is that it does have balanced audio inputs.
I was going to ask you about that.
Not XLR.
The Canon does not, right?
Which Canon?
One of them. I know the 5D does not. Do the C300, 500, or XD?
I think they do have balanced.
Why is that important? That's important so we can use professional audio gear.
Right, and you don't get interference.
Not interference or buzz or FM radio stations.
Right.
If anybody is old enough to remember the Sony VO4800 3/4-inch recorder, which had an unbalanced input, I used to get pickup radio stations in Connecticut. I'm originally from Connecticut.
So this is good. You can use FM radio. It doesn't have XLR, but you can take an XLR to phono adapter.
A quarter inch phone TRS, which stands for tip ring sleeve, which was actually born with the telephone switchboards about 100 years ago. But still used today for headphones and things like that. It's like what a lot of people consider to be a stereo plug. It's just not wired as stereo. It's wired as mono balanced. And that's why there are two, by the way. There are two. They're left and right.
So this is good news. You can get good audio into this camera.
Oh, yeah.
As
yes.
well.
And I thought it was interesting for them to use a TRS instead of an XLR because it makes
well,
sense.
I mean,
you
space,
look at it,
right?
It's like it saves a lot of space. It's a lot easier to jack in. It's, you know, there's a lot of reasons to do it. I looked at it first and I was like, really? You put a quarter inch in there? And then I was like, oh, that kind
of... One of the first things that I'm going to be testing is the quality of the preamp. I do a lot of comparison of the quality of preamps, especially when connected to a dynamic microphone like the ones we're speaking
right.
to right now.
Right.
Because
it's all
asking more from the preamp when you connect a dynamic mic, so that's the way to test the preamp. And I love to do side-by-sides of those things, and that's what I'll do as soon as I receive one.
You'll write that up in the Pro Video Coalition.
Of course I will.
Yeah,
of course I will.
You know, there's another interesting camera announcement from GoPro, which is that they've increased the data rate on the GoPro to a 35 megabit data rate.
Wow.
Yeah. Which means that we can now get high-quality H.264 at 35 megabit a second recording.
Which is the same as XD Cam, right?
Yes, except XD Cam is MPEG 2,
right?
And the GoPro is MPEG 4, so we get more quality on the same data rate.
Right.
And, you know, what's interesting to me at the show is the spectacular range of cameras from the very low-end small GoPros up to the Arri Alexas and the new Sony cameras. And I'm fascinated with the spectrum, where before we had everything was $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, and that was it. And now we've got a range from $500 to $100,000.
Well, what's interesting is that everyone's using them at every level, too. Yeah. I mean, the GoPros are being used in films. I mean, they use them in Red Tails. They use them, you know, and then you have the big cameras being used in web productions. And
well, I was at the GoPro booth yesterday, and I forgot his name. One of the founders was talking to me about it, and we were looking at it because one of the things that they implemented, it's called... it's ProTune is what they call this mode, and it's a free firmware upgrade if you have a GoPro 2. But what it does is it gives you that 35 megabit, also gives you 24 frames.
Right.
And it can change the signal to the similar to the Cine style that Technicolor came out to. It changes it to that, so you have a log signal coming out of the GoPro. So you can now take I was taking material that had snow. I mean, the kind of things you do with a GoPro. Snow, bright blue skies, and just changing it around and seeing the detail. No, it wasn't clipping or anything. And, that was like a really smart part. You know, you're starting to see a lot of partnerships between different companies where it's, you know, it was a friend of ours, Josh Pines at Technicolor, came up with the whole Cine style log for DSLRs. Experimented with the Canon first, and now it's implemented into the GoPro, and there's a product that they're going to put out also that you can bring that very easily into the look you want. But I think that's why you have this full spectrum of cameras now, because now we can bring it in and use it all. It doesn't have to match exactly, but you can definitely... I mean, I saw a comparison of the GoPro with the ProTune and a simple 5D with Cine style, and there are a lot more similarities than there were differences.
Well, and the interesting thing also is that now you can, with the Hero 2, you can connect it to your, via Wi-Fi, you can connect it to your iPhone, and use the iPhone as your... So you can use this, the Hero 2 will...
And this is a $300 camera?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got this little backpack that will let you do a Wi-Fi connection to your iPhone, and then be able to view the video on your iPhone, so it becomes your viewfinder, and you can record and everything else hit record from your iPhone, which is, again, these guys are so focused. I mean, obviously a lot of filmmakers are using them, but they are so focused on this action, the action crowd, that they just keep on looking for, how to solve that. And I think that's the one thing that I kept on seeing over and over again, and these companies that are really excelling here, and I think this is any company that excels, but I think that with the way that the online world has become, and what you're seeing are the companies that are expanding and surviving are the ones that all they do is listen to their clients and figure out how do they creatively solve a client's problem. And we saw that over and over from K-Tech talking about boom poles to GoPro to Canon to Red that they're sitting there listening to people talk. I mean, to smoke, they listen to their clients and they're figuring out how do we creatively solve that problem. And the ones that aren't doing that, the ones that have some kind of, they're pushing the bottom line, are the ones that are slowly just disappearing. We don't see them anymore. And it just, I think that that process is accelerating because the consumer has so much information all the time and can make that decision so much faster.
Right, right. All right, we do have some Apple news.
Well, all of these things have to work products.
Almost all of them are for Apple, right?
Yeah, you can't come out with a product, a camera, anything, if you can't use it on a Mac.
Yeah.
And that's the one.
That's where content creation is,
yeah,
lives.
It really is. I mean, if you talk to anybody, you know, the people, I mean, I was one of the weirdos that had, you know, I was working with Macs in the late 80s and 90s, you know, prying open, you know, SEs and things. But now it's, if you can't get it into a Mac, you just don't work with it. So everybody's addressing that, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And ProRes has become the standard file format.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, ProRes is being used where they thought that might be a, well, with the Arri Alexa, when they thought that might be a, just a proxy sort of file, they're actually using that to finish television shows.
Right.
So
right.
That's the master format, but it goes right into a Mac and gets edited. So.
Yeah.
Think of it as a camera that has a Mac as a dongle.
The Mac is just a dongle.
I have at least one Mac-related product that was announced here at NAB to talk about.
Good.
And I think Alex has a few more.
That's what we'll do. When we come back, we're going to get your NAB picks, and if they're Mac-specific, that would be nice. Not a requirement.
At least one of them is.
Darren Okada is here, cinematographer at theasc.com, Alan Tepper. From the Pro Video Coalition and his Techno Tour podcast, Larry Jordan, digitalproductionbuzz.com, Alex Lindsay from thepixelcore.com. More in a moment. I'll tell you what's a great accessory for your Apple, for your iPhone. It's audible.com, the great audio book company. Everybody here in this room is an Audible fan, or if they weren't, they ought to be. Because I tell you what, if you fly, to get to a conference, if you spend time in a car commuting, if you carpool, if you're
cleaning your house, that's what I use.
Everybody who cleans their house should have audible.com.
I hate cleaning. The only thing that makes it bearable. I mean, I don't mind exercising. I don't mind traveling.
Oh,
I hate it. And the only thing that makes it bearable is Audible.
Just pretend you're not. You could listen to Cinderella or something. It'd be good. It'd be perfect. Kind of a nice tie-in there. Audible.com is the place to go. In fact, I'm going to tell you in a moment how you can get a free audiobook from Audible. But first, go there and browse around just to see what they've got. 100,000 titles. Every new book that comes out on Audible.com. In fact, there is a new Stephen King novel coming out in a week. The most recent in the Dark Tower series. Of course,
who's
Audible.
Reading it?
You know, Stephen King sometimes reads his own stuff. I don't know. That's a good question. Audible will have it. In fact, they've got a little promotion going on where you can win a copy of it for free. In fact, when I first joined Audible, I've joined it so long ago that they didn't have any Stephen King. They had like one Stephen King. Ever since, they've got every Stephen King, many of them read by Stephen King. I want you to go to audible.com/MacBreak, and you can get a book for free. You'll be signed up for the Gold account, which is a book a month. You can select any book you want that's worth a credit and listen to it. And if you decide, you know, this isn't for me, cancel. You pay nothing. The book is yours to keep. But I think you're going to want to stick around. The new Dark Tower novel, April 24th, is called The Wind Through the Keyhole. Doesn't say who reads it. That's a good question. But all you have to do to win it is to download a Stephen King novel, and there's some great ones to choose from. I've got The Stand on my iPhone. That's my next Stephen King novel. I tell you, I love this stuff. Audible brings books to life for those times when you can't hold a book, but you want to read. Audible podcast. This is a new book I'm kind of intrigued by called The President's Club, Inside the World's Most Exclusive Fraternity. The folks who have been former presidents of the United States. They have a secret club.
Do they have a secret club?
Yeah. I can't wait to talk about gossip. Anyway, Audible.
I'd love to see a meeting there. There's something about having all those guys.
All the guys,
yeah.
And sometimes it's a small club. Sometimes it's a big club. audible.com/MacBreak. That's what you need to do to get your copy of an Audible book for free. We thank them for their support. So just a couple of quick stories, then we'll get your Mac picks of the week. Philippe Starck, remember we talked last week There was all sorts of speculation about, he says in several interviews, the French designer, actually we talked about it on Twitter, said, yes, I'm working with Apple on something very, very exciting, but I cannot talk about it. Turns out, what a blowhard. He actually was working on Steve Jobs' yacht design.
Yes.
Not something you can buy. The revolutionary project was a yacht that Steve Jobs mentions in the autobiography by Walter Isaacson. I guess it's not an autobiography, but Jobs talks about it. He says, "I'm probably not going to live to see it done, but this is one way I keep my spirits up as I work on something." Apparently, Stark says Laureen, Steve's widow, will continue that project. So it's a yacht, and look at it. Holy cow.
It looks like a Mac, except it's a yacht.
Holy camoly.
Yeah, if a Mac was a yacht, that's exactly what it would look like, or an iPhone.
He said in an interview that he met with Jobs once a month at Palo Alto for 7 years, is now meeting with Laureen to continue this yacht. That's ridiculous. Okay. I mean, not that I wouldn't want one. Or at least to take a ride on one. But
see, when I was scanning that, I got all excited because I thought he was working with Tony Stark.
Ah,
see, I was ready.
Stark Industries.
Yeah. I was like, what is Apple doing with Tony Stark?
If you haven't downloaded the update to Java, do that. They have another update to Java that not only fixes the malware hole but also removes flashback from your system if you have malware. We know that 600,000 Mac users. I've been infected by flashbacks. So.
In future news, Apple will be dropping Flash and Java.
Yeah. Well, they did. Remember, Steve Jobs said Java's a ball and chain, and I'm not. They don't include it, but people will download it because, well, Minecraft and other things need Java.
Right.
Apple was slow to fix it. They fixed it now, and they offer a fix that removes it, just so you know. Ashton Kutcher will be in a movie, as we said before, but now we know the movie is about Steve Jobs and Apple from 1971 to 2000. Filming starts next month. Apple II turns 35. How many of you started this whole thing on an Apple II?
I started an Apple IIe.
Well, that counts. Yes. That's an Apple
Original
II.
Mac.
Original Mac? Yeah.
128K.
I learned how to write a lot of programs.
I had a 128K. Yep. 35 years ago yesterday, the Apple II computer.
Did you know what I actually learned how to write code on, though? Yeah, was a Franklin. Remember the
Which
Franklin?
Which was a fake Apple.
That was the fake Apple. There was a Franklin dealer down below my dad's law firm, and so I was down there every Saturday hacking around on the Franklin, playing Aztec and learning how to program.
And finally, I'm going to report this just because it's the best headline of the week from CNET. Stink different. A new fragrance smells like Apple Macintosh. Three artists in Australia have teamed up with a perfume maker to create a fragrance based on the smell of a brand new Mac.
What do they call it? I smell.
I smell. Stink different.
Somehow I just don't know if I want to really smell like a Mac. How many do they have to buy and open to sample it? That's the question. You know, you have to open
you
it up.
You can buy new car smell, which is just all the PCBs leaking off of the...
They actually have a little spray in.
Carpet. I don't know if it's a good thing.
Thank you for making it sound so attractive.
Yes.
It's not good for you, but it smells like new Mac. All right, let's go around the horn and find out what you... Anything. It could be anything, but be nice if it had something to do with Apple. Product that you liked a lot at NAB.
This was announced here. Or I think it was announced here.
Oh, you did a segment on this, and I'm really excited. In fact, I think
this
I wanted to... Or, this is the Tadpole, right? Love this. The K-Tech Tadpole.
Yeah, So K-Tech is a they make
booms, microphone booms.
It took us a long time to do that recording. There's some great outtakes from that one.
Are there really?
Yeah. So,
like you got hit with the boom and
no, it was just referring to
booms,
things that extend and
she was cute. I could tell you were kind of enjoying talking.
So anyway, so the
daughter of the guy who invented this stuff.
So K-Tech is kind of known in the industry as the
boom company.
They are the boom company. I mean, they make the best booms out there. And so what they did is they took all that technology and they put it into an iPhone holder with a great case. And let's see if you can see it here. So I have a pole. You can see it here. It's extendable.
As you said in your segment when you were there, there's a lot of cheesy versions of this. This is
so
rock
solid. I have done so much. So this is in my quest of becoming a one-man reporting machine. You see how I like to do those segments? I want to do them all by myself.
Boom, 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 boom.
And so, the thing is that I wanted to do interviews, so if you check this out, Leo, see, you can imagine. You could hold this out like this, and I can be sitting
Hi,
there talking.
How are you?
See, I can be talking right
and
into
it. Doesn't
it.
Look. It looks like you got a cameraman, except your left hand is strangely absent.
Yes, exactly. But literally, if you held it down here like this,
then you wouldn't even know,
and you could be sitting there, chatting away.
I'm buying one of these right now,
and it's super solid. I mean, so the thing is, this is the professional level of this. This is not the
And it's a standard ball head, so you could put it on a GoPro or anything that fits it.
This is a quarter 20s, so you can mount for your non-technical term is standard mount for your tripod, so you can turn your iPad or your iPod, iPhone any way you want. And again, it just feels solid, and you make it nice and small, and you can put it back in your, and you can put a GoPro on the end of it. You can put whatever you want.
Putting a GoPro on it.
Yeah, and of course you can go up high and get over everybody's head, and anyway, but I like the idea. So now I'm just working on getting the wireless mic set up. Here's the worst part. So yesterday there was a long conversation with Letrasonic about how I was going to attach a Letrasonic wireless.
Just have a little wire coming down here.
I know, but it would be much better if it was wireless. So there was a conversation with Letrasonic about how to wire that up. So that's what we're working on next. So anyway.
Actually, what you need is another K-Tech boom mic pole, and then you can hold both of them like this.
Or even there is someone who makes another shotgun mic that'll attach.
Shotgun would be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be the.
How
next.
Heavy is it? Let me
see. Not that heavy.
These are really light.
Right, and the other thing is, but it's not too light. The problem that I've had with the other ones that I've played with is that they're not stable enough. So you feel like they're bouncing around.
The phone is the heaviest thing. I mean, the pole itself is very light.
Yeah, and it's great. And they make a couple different sizes. This is like the middle size. I think this is like a 3 foot. They make
How
a
much?
6 foot. I think this is 115.
So it is a little
more
pricey.
And the case is like 99 too. So it's
you need a special.
But it's like machined well. I mean, if this is something that you want to do as a one man reporter, a one woman reporter, and you want to be able to do this, there's a lot of people on the floor trying to do this.
So
if you want to figure that out.
You just shoot yourself.
Right.
You can shoot yourself, and you can use it to get high. So
they make a mini for $60, the Tadpole Mini.
The Tadpole Mini that you can just kind of hold up.
Right.
And then they make one, I think, that's like a 18-inch or 3-foot, which I think this one is. And it's just a – I just think it's the solution I've been looking for. I mean, a lot of you have seen this iteration of me constantly playing with this, how do I shoot stuff myself? And this is the state of the art at the moment. So.
And it's waterproof, right?
It is.
Waterproof?
It turns out that it is waterproof.
How did it get wet?
What? we're just talking about the importance of waterproof. This is waterproof.
It's liquid belt.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Very nice. I like that. That's K-T-E-L.
K-Tech.
K-T-K, I'm sorry. K-Tel makes those records.
Yes, exactly. They don't make records, but they do make great boom poles.
K-Tech.
Yes.
All right, Larry, what did you see at NAB that you're excited about? I bet Final Cut is one thing.
Well, there's nothing to see at Final Cut. Right. It hasn't changed. It's going to change, but it hasn't changed yet. What I like is Thunderbolt. And the thing that I'm impressed with Thunderbolt is it's everywhere. And an example is G Technology with the new Thunderbolt drives. They just released a RAID 0, which is a really high-speed two-drive Thunderbolt RAID. It's 4 terabytes for $699 and 8 terabytes for $899. You can daisy-chain the Thunderbolts together, but what's even cooler is you can daisy-chain them and they show up as a JBOD on your computer. You can then stripe them using Disk Utility to turn it into a RAID, and you have two separate boxes connected via Thunderbolt, and you're able to drive a fully saturated gigabyte a second of data from these RAIDs. They're going to do a second single drive, which is Thunderbolt coming out in about a month, and then they're going to work on a RAID 5. And for me, RAID 5 is where you want to put your data because you've got the protection against data redundancy.
And if you have those two drives or the set of drives that are there, and they're both RAID 0, you get that nice speed, but then you can, as a JBOD, you can put them back together as a RAID 1, and then you're basically mirroring all that data really fast to both so that you know that you always have a whole other copy of everything.
And because it's a RAID 10 when you do that.
Yes.
and because it's Thunderbolt and because of the new high-speed Hitachi drives that are inside, which are now Western Digital because they can't figure out who their parent is,
and then we have a name for the show.
Are you my mommy?
And they're able to get about 150 megabytes a second off a single drive. So RAID 0 normally would limit you to about 50 megabytes, but with Thunderbolt, you can do about 150 in a RAID 1, about 300 on a RAID 0, and you can daisy chain up to six of these units together, and you could get some serious speed coming from it.
Yeah.
So first, the ubiquity of Thunderbolt, and second, that G technology stuff.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. Thank you, Larry Jordan. Alan Tepper, your pick of the
show. Thank you. I'm so glad that although my tip is also a Thunderbolt tip, it's not the same one.
Thank goodness.
I was afraid that it might be the same one when he mentioned Thunderbolt. This is another product from AJA announced here at NAB, and it's called the T-Tap. And the T stands for Thunderbolt, if you were wondering what the T stands for. It doesn't stand for Tepper or TechnoTour. It stands for Thunderbolt. And it's a $249 little device that fits in the palm of your hand that goes from Thunderbolt simultaneously to SDI and to HDMI at 10-bit.
Oh.
So out only. Mm-hmm. It's for all those situations where you're doing file-based, you're not capturing from tape anymore, which is the case of most of us nowadays. Or if we are, it might be through FireWire, if we were dealing with HDB or something like that, but not through a box. And it gives you the proper monitoring. If you connected a proper calibrated monitor in whatever color space you're dealing with, which in high-definition television is normally Rec. 709, if you have a Rec. 709 monitor at 10-bit, or sometimes called a 30-bit because they talk about 10-bit per color, then for only $249 and self-powered, you have proper monitoring from the proper NLEs, including Final Cut Pro 10, Premiere Pro, and I'm not sure which other ones, but I know those two are definitely supported. And for people who are not aware of this, in order to do proper monitoring perfectly, we've always needed some hardware device. But those hardware devices have had a lot more features that we no longer need a lot of the times nowadays in order to capture and in order to go out to analog signals and things like that. So this represents a decrease in what that normally would have cost us. It's only $249. It is an endpoint for your Thunderbolt chain, so you want to connect all your Thunderbolt storage first and any other device, and then finally put that at the end because it is an endpoint. And that's a characteristic, basically, of all Thunderbolt devices that are bus-powered. They're the endpoint. And those that take extra power are usually the ones that have a through pass-through.
And do you know if, does it do proper, like, 59.94 coming out so that you can run the...
It does the proper frame rates of whatever your sequence is. I'm not sure if you have to set it specifically in the AJA control panel or not, but I did ask a very specific question because I happen to be very fond of the HP Dream Color, mm-hmm. which does Rec. 709 and DCI Digital Cinema and other color spaces. And that monitor, although it's wonderful and I love it and it's very good for its price, it's very fussy about the signal that it receives,
right.
And it absolutely must be RGB over HDMI. It cannot be component or YUV. And that capability is in the control panel of the T-Tap. And it does do it at the proper frame rate of whatever you're doing, whether it's 23.976, 25, 29.97, 50, or 59.94.
That's awesome.
And it's bus-powered, so you don't even need to plug it in or anything.
You keep it in your pocket and plug it into your MacBook Air.
It's awesome.
You're ready to go.
Wow.
With the proper proper monitoring. Because, you know, you can connect a monitor without such a device, but then you cannot completely count on seeing the color and the gamma properly and the frame rate properly.
Well, my question specifically was related to the fact that you can't plug your laptop directly into a Key Pro if you wanted to record it because it needs to see 59.94. It can't see the 60p.
Could you use this?
And that's what that's my curiosity is whether I could go out of my laptop and go through this to get into a Key Pro.
I doubt that it has HDCP. I doubt it has any protection.
You don't need that. So. You don't need that. You just need to know that it's going to be 59.94, not 60.
Right. Yeah. No, it's good that it doesn't have it.
Yeah, I use
otherwise it would prevent you from recording.
Yeah, exactly.
I use a $10,000 image, which I don't own, by the way. People are going to ask. I don't own it. I rent it because it just to convert from 60p to 59.94.
What? $10,000 just for this?
Now I don't, because
0.06
we
0.06 frames.
Now we just use a PIX 240 to do it, because you can just plug it right into the PIX and just record. But before it was like this huge deal to plug that in. So
you anyway. You record 60 and then you conform later.
Yes,
makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it. Finally, last but not least, your pick of the show.
You know, since we're talking about, everybody's talking about equipment, I actually have an app that I like.
An app?
Is that okay?
An app? Yeah, of course it's okay. I see you have your iPad there.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have probably talked about this before, but they just upgraded this version that I discovered here. It's called Cinemark Storyboard. And I actually used it on the last movie that I worked on. And it works great, where you just need to lay out shots really fast. So all you do is, I was taking photos with my iPad, and let me bring it up here. This would be really quick.
This would be good for you, Alex.
I'm getting it.
Yeah.
They make the HD version, which is what the new version of it is right now. But this is the old version, only because that's the only one I have photos in. But if you can see that.
Yeah. Oh, look at that.
You use photos to storyboard your shoot.
Yeah, you can bring the photos in anyway. I was doing it actually linking it with my iPhone at one point and doing it this way, or taking location photos. But what I like is it makes use of the interface. You can just move it around, whatever order you want to cut, do different versions, and then you can email this directly to, I was emailing it to the producers. Hey, you got nothing to worry about. 10 setups are out of here.
Wow.
And there's an HD version of it now, and I found it to be one of the most useful things for anybody. I'm, you know, trying to create content on the Mac and stuff. And there's one other last thing.
How much is that?
This new version, I think, is $29 now.
Right, and that's the name of it again?
Cinemark.
Yeah.
It's on the store. Cinemark Storyboard HD. But it's fantastic. You can do other things where you can time out. You can play it out. You can time it out. You can indicate a camera move here, like dollying in, that kind of thing. So it's great.
It saves so much time when you can.
Yeah, and this is the first thing. I mean, I've been trying to do this on my Macs for years. This is the first thing I can use on the set, and in literally 2 minutes, have a version of how it's going to cut, and now relay it out. What's the most efficient way to shoot it? Let's put all the cameras here. We'll get these shots and go for it. So,
right.
But there's one last thing I want to give Leo, since everything's digital.
Yes.
And this is for another show or another story. But it's like, what do we do with all this stuff? This is a copy of the Digital Dilemma 2. It's not for sale. Not selling anything. You can download it at Oscars.org. It was done by the Academy Science and Technology Council, which I'm a member of. There's two versions of it, but it talks about how long digital data lasts, what to do with it, what to do with all these images, and it applies to, you know, the consumer, because where are we going with all these family pictures and everything?
It's a huge issue, yeah.
Anyway, that's for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Darren. Thank you. You can get this at Oscars.org?
Yeah, you can download the version of that.
Oh,
but it's a really complete study. This one deals with a lot of the independent films and case studies. The first version just deals with the amount of volume and how it's being stored and how fragile it is.
It's not just a format issue, although a good deal of it is a format issue, but it's also... there's a lot of it.
Yeah, and you know, now, I mean, this is the world we live in. So it's you to shoot it and assume you have it is not necessarily the case.
Keeping track of it is important,
right? Yeah. I mean, this applies to everything, not just images, but also banking.
Everything.
You know,
yeah.
But because images, everything that we do, is so intricate, that's one reason why we. We push to do that at the Academy. So
cool. Thank you, Darren. Darren Okada is a cinematographer, former president of the ASC, is at the ASC.com. And are you working on a film? Are you getting ready to work on a film?
No, I just finished shooting. I did 5 episodes of this show for ABC called Castle. I finished
last
week.
Love Castle.
And
yeah.
I had a movie last week that opened, American Reunion, so that was fun.
That's exciting. So you're kind of relaxing.
Now I get to play and demo all these cameras.
What fun. Figure out what you're going to use the next time.
Yeah.
Alan Tepper is from the his own podcast, Techno Tour, but he also writes for the Pro Video Coalition.
That's
Where do
correct.
We find Techno Tour?
Well, Techno Tour, the podcast is available in iTunes or at technotour.us or any of your podcatcher on any of your mobile phones. Just look, search for Techno Tour as it's spelled on the screen, or I'll spell it T-E-C-N-O-T-U-R. By the way, our listeners are known as Technoturistas.
Aha! Aha!
Even in the English version, because, you know, people catch on with what Technoturistas means.
So it's in both Castilian and in English.
Yes. Two separate RSS feeds, both available at that same website. My personal site is alantepper.com with a double L and a double P.
Thank you, Alan. So good to finally get you on the show. I really
Thank
appreciate
you very much.
It.
We'll it's an honor.
Get you back soon. Larry Jordan, it's so funny because it was a year ago. We were all talking about Final Cut 10, and you're the Final Cut 10 guy. Now here we are a year later, and some of the glow has worn off.
Indeed.
But maybe there's hope left yet.
You know, I think the reason, what was it, the line from Out to Sea is, there's always hope, that's why they invented death.
To kind of cut that off and finally just say, no more hope.
You know, I think there's always hope. And it's the industry is in complete transition. The definition of professional is changing. Yeah. And how you earn a living with video is changing.
Yeah.
The market doesn't support high-priced products. We've seen that from Autodesk, we've seen it from Apple. The market is demanding easier-to-use interfaces, and we're looking at new ways to create video in ways that didn't exist even 2-3 years ago.
Right.
And
the amazing.
The industry's responding to that, and the question is the response headed in the right direction?
Right.
The only way they'll know is to release it and get feedback and then make changes. Right. And that's really why NAB exists and why we're here, because the industry is in a complete state of flux right now.
Yeah. Well, I hope they're listening a little bit to Larry Jordan. LarryJordan.biz for Edit Smarter, the best Final Cut Pro training out there. You must go there and participate and get
Thank you, sir.
Learn. Thank you so much.
It's a delight being on. Thanks for the invitation.
And the podcast is called the
DigitalProductionBuzz.com. We're covering NAB at 80 interviews and in-depth and all the technical details for people that care.
Well, that's actually good to know. So people who want even more than they're getting can get more at DigitalProductionBuzz.com.
Indeed.
Thank you, Larry. Alex Lindsay, what are you going to stick around and do more? Or are you going to go home and melt into a puddle? Are you going to do more?
I'm going to do. We're going to do some more segments. I'm going to probably shoot some stuff with my iPhone. You know, that's my constant R&D. So I'm probably going to put that on the Pixel Core G Plus page.
Right.
And so they'll be just my raw little notes, and then a lot of those will get turned into real ones, or some of them will get turned into real ones
so
tomorrow. And
to you for all of the stuff you shot,
I'm having fun. I have to admit, it's great having a large crew and people who, you know, like. Everyone
it's
working on
when
stuff
you're all by yourself.
So it's I'm enjoying it, and so thanks for having me.
We are covering it wall to wall. We thank the National Association of Broadcasters show for letting us be their official streaming partner. We're having a lot of fun here. I hope you're enjoying the broadcast. Thanks, everybody. We'll send you back now to the Brick House Studios for Twitch Photo. Leo Laporte. Now get back to work. Break time is over.